From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Today, our weekly drop-in at the UN headquarters in New York begins with a press conference from the Secretary General's spokesperson, Stephane Dujarric, followed by Monica Grayley, the spokesperson for the President of the General Assembly.
Good afternoon. I will start off with a statement on Afghanistan. The Secretary General strongly condemns the attack this morning on a bus traveling along the Kandahar-Herat highway in Afghanistan. The Secretary General reiterates that international humanitarian law explicitly prohibits indiscriminate attacks and directed against civilians and appeals to all parties to the conflict in Afghanistan to uphold their obligations to protect civilians. The Secretary General expresses his deepest sympathies to the families of the victims and to the government and people of Afghanistan. He wishes a speedy recovery to those injured. We've also been asked about the attacks against the African Union mission in Somalia that took place earlier this week. And I can say that the Secretary General condemns the deadly attack and expresses his deep condolences to the bereaved families and the government of Burundi. He wishes a swift recovery to all those injured. The Secretary General pays homage to the AMISOM troops and their sacrifices in the pursuit of peace in Somalia. He reiterates the resolve of the United Nations to work with the African Union and and AMISOM to support the people and government of Somalia. Tomorrow will mark 1 year since the government of the Democratic Republic of the Congo declared an outbreak of Ebola in North Kivu province. And yesterday in Goma, a miner working in the province of Ituri became the city's second case of Ebola. He reportedly died this morning. In reaction to this new case, the Ebola Emergency Response Coordinator, David Greasley, and the World Health Organization Assistant Director General for Emergency Response, Dr. Ibrahima Sosefal, said they are mobilizing all aspects of the response to stop the spread of Ebola in Goma. Surveillance at all points of entry and points of control in the area are being stepped up. It's one way to make an entrance. As I said, surveillance at all points of entry and points of control in the area are being stepped up. They're also increasing community engagement, risk communications, and active case finding. In a joint statement to mark the one-year milestone, the Director General of the World Health Organization, the Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordination, and the Executive Director of UNICEF, as well as the Executive Director of the World Food Program, issued a joint statement adding that this latest case in such a dense population center underscores the very real risk of a spike in disease transmission, perhaps beyond the country's border, and the very urgent need for a strengthened global response and increased donor investment. Both statements are online. And I wanted to flag to you that tomorrow morning at 11 a.m., David Greasley and Dr. Fall will be joining us jointly by video conference in this room to provide you with an update on the outbreak and answer any questions you may have. Turning to Yemen, preliminary reports from local authorities in the Katabir district of Sadr Governorate in Yemen indicate that 14 people were killed, including four children, in an attack on the market on Monday. In addition, 26 people, including 14 children, were reportedly wounded. Several of the wounded are in critical condition. The UN humanitarian coordinator in Yemen, Elise Grande, said this is a terrible turn of events following 3 months in which the number of reported civilian casualties in Sadr has been falling. She said the latest deaths were a reversal of everything everyone has been working towards the last weeks and months. Health partners are providing medical supplies to the facilities receiving the wounded, including trauma kits to treat up to 100 casualties. International humanitarian law requires that all parties to the conflict take all feasible steps to protect civilians and civilian infrastructure. The joint UN program on HIV/AIDS, better known as UNAIDS, launched a new website to identify national laws and policies related to AIDS response. covering areas as diverse as a country's ability to diagnose HIV amongst young babies, the existence of discriminating laws against transgender people, or whether people are prosecuted for even carrying condoms. The Laws and Policies Analytics website aims to give a full overview of the country's laws and policies regarding the HIV response. It allows policy data to be viewed jointly with other information on the HIV epidemic and response. Under the 2016 UN Political Declaration on HIV and AIDS, countries committed to accelerating the efforts to significantly increase the availability of high-level data on HIV. The website hosts data from over 140 countries that can be searched by country or origin through an interactive map on any specific topic. And tomorrow at 3 p.m., there'll be a briefing here by Ambassador Joanna Wernicka of Poland, the permanent representative of Poland, who will be speaking to you in her capacity as the president of the Security Council for the month of August. Mr. Bays.
I've got a number of questions, but I'll start off with two. You started off with Afghanistan, so I'll start off with Afghanistan. On perhaps a more optimistic note, the US Special Representative, Zalmay Khalilzad, tweeted earlier on, "I'm off to Doha with a stop in Islamabad. In Doha, if the Taliban do their part, we will do ours and conclude the agreement we've been working on." That's the agreement between the US and the Taliban. What is the Secretary General's view on the progress of these negotiations? Clearly there's a intra-Afghan element. And what is the UN's involvement? Are there UN representatives in Doha for this, given that the UN has a big mission in Afghanistan and the UN Security Council provides the mandate for the US-led NATO force there?
Sure. We have been on a regular basis kept abreast by the US of the updates on the talks. They've been keeping our colleagues in Kabul informed. I don't want to predict what will happen in these talks. They've been ongoing for a long time, but obviously let's wait and see what happens. For our part, the UN has had regular contacts with the Taliban as well, and as I said, we'll wait to see what happens in Doha.
Second question is on the situation of the bombing of the hospitals in Idlib. A demarche after the Security Council meeting by two-thirds of the Security Council, 10 ambassadors, very clearly saying to the Secretary General that deconfliction is not working. There needs to be an inquiry into why it's not working. And as the deconfliction mechanism is US-owned, they believe he has the mandate and the legal power to set up an inquiry. Is he going to do so?
Well, I think the issue of the continuing attacks and destruction of health facilities is one that Mr. Locock has raised very, very forcefully and directly in Security Council, both open and public meeting. We have indeed received a request along the lines you outlined. The Secretary General is taking this request very seriously and has asked for a thorough legal analysis on how to address it. Sir.
On Syria, again, is Mr. Pedersen going to Astana somebody else is going to...
The UN will be represented in Astana. I don't know exactly who, but it will be represented.
And is there going to be an announcement on the Constitutional Committee?
We'll have to wait and see. Maggie?
Welcome back, Steph. Could you just, on the Yemen, on the 14 killed Monday in the market attack, did you specify, I'm not sure I heard you say, whether it was an airstrike or some sort of a ground attack?
It was an attack where we are currently working to gather more information to clarify the circumstances around the attack.
So you don't know if it was
We don't have any of the information. We don't know the exact nature of the attack. We do know the results of the attack.
But you don't know if it was an airstrike or a car bomb?
But we're trying to gather more information. Okay. Michelle?
Thanks, Steph. Sorry. North Korea, they have fired some more Short-range ballistic missiles, according to the South Korean military. Does the Secretary General have any response on that?
No, we're very much aware of the reports that for the second time in a week, the DPRK has launched ballistic missiles. I think for the Secretary General, this is just another reminder of the importance of restarting talks on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. ED, then Masood.
I was also going to ask about the DPRK launches, but as a follow-up, does the Secretary General have any plans to contact the North Koreans about these launches, which do violate Security Council sanctions?
Nothing to report on at this point. Masood...
Thank you, Stepan. Welcome back again. I just want to ask you, Stepan, has the Secretary General taken note of the ceasefire violation in the occupied area of India and Pakistan, which are happening and have been protested by both sides? So has the Secretary General taken note?
We've seen the press reports. I don't have any specific language on that for you today.
But has he taken note of
that? As I said, we've seen the press reports. I don't have any specific language on that for you at this point.
Okay, now, but another thing. The other day I asked Farhan about the Israeli claiming that they killed the Palestinian just for the sake of it, and that Israeli newspaper, Taslim, carried that report and said that Israeli soldiers have said that sometimes we just carry the or kill the protesters just for the sake of it. Can you please comment on that?
If Farhan has spoken, I have nothing to add to what he said. Majid, okay. And then Evelyn.
Thank you, Stefan, and welcome back. Today there's a meeting in Bahrain about the UK proposal to create a naval force to protect the freedom of navigation in the Gulf. What is the Secretary General's position about this particular proposal?
We have no, we're not represented at this meeting. We'll have to see what comes out. The issue of freedom of navigation is one that, as in principle, we've always supported. But obviously, we have no specific comment on the meeting as we're not there, and I don't think it's concluded as of yet.
And about Syria, there seems to be the talks between Turkey and U.S. To create a safe zone is going nowhere, and there's threats of use of military force by Turkey. Any comments about that?
I think what we need to see with the Syrian civilians who are caught in the crossfire need to see is a de-escalation of the violence and a stop to the violence that they're suffering from. Evelyn? Okay, great. Okay. Yes, sir. And then I'll come back to you in a second.
Thank you, Mr. Dzhurik. Alan Bulkati with RIA Novosti. Following up the question about the DPRK, does the Secretary General qualify the recent launches like a violation of Security Council resolutions? Thank you.
I think that's for the Council to decide on. I've said what I've had to say on it. Yes, sir.
It's a bit of history, but did the Secretary General happen to see the article in The Atlantic about Ronald Reagan, who was the governor of California at the time, talking about African delegations to Richard Nixon, in which he said, to see those monkeys from African countries, damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes?
No, I'm not aware that he's seen that.
Maybe his, you know, he's talking about hate speech recently. He could make a comment on that.
As you said, it's history. I have not seen that. He has not read that article. Yes.
Has the Secretary General received a letter that's been sent to him, I believe, and also to the President of the Security Council and all the Security Council members from Russia with new proposals for security in the Gulf, suggesting all regional and international players come together, new security concept, active and efficient steps at international, regional level are needed to normalize and further improve the situation? And what does he make of those
proposals? I will check. I'm not aware that the letter's been received, but I will check for you.
And another question on a different subject. The U.S. new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations may well be named in the coming hours. Ambassador Kelly Craft, mm-hmm. her nomination is going to the Senate floor. Members of the committee who examined her, the minority members, say, I quote, her lack of relevant experience, failure to carry out the most basic duties, and the questions surrounding her adherence to the highest standards regarding potential conflicts of interest raise serious doubts about her suitability for this position. Given the concerns, is the Secretary General concerned that a new ambassador with one of the most important jobs, a P5 ambassador, could have so many question marks about her?
Look, I'm not going to delve into the legislative debates going on in any member state through the process which an ambassador is named. We look forward to having a permanent representative of the United States, and the Secretary General looks forward to working with that person in a very constructive way. Seriously.
Sorry, we had Mrs. Gamba yesterday talking to us about the Children Armed Conflict Report, which the Security Council will discuss tomorrow. She mentioned that it's ultimately the Secretary General who signs off on this report because it's issued in his name. Given the history with this report, has he faced any extra pressure from any member states regarding the annex blacklisting some government forces?
The report is his report. Including the annex based on his decision. As always, I mean, let me leave it at that. It's just my first day back. I don't want to get in trouble too quickly. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Nice to meet you. I wanted to bring back the statement on Syria. I know yesterday in the Security Council there was a mention of how the majority of the reports that were received about the attacks that are being placed on the medical facilities are questionable. Is the Security Council, the Security Secretary General, have any statement to this as to whether or not this is true? And I know that Locock is he's been reiterating that everybody can see the truth, that everybody can see what's happening there. So we're questioning now who or how, but can you tell us how we can, what's the Secretary General can suggest as far as stopping or de-escalating the situation?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the Secretary General fully stands by what Mr. Locock and other senior UN officials have presented to the Security Council. They represent the Secretariat's position. So I will not comment on what Mr. Locock said. He speaks better than me on these issues and very forcefully, and I think his statements are very clear on the need to stop these attacks and these destruction of health facilities. On going forward, we have and will continue to do whatever we can to try to bring the parties together to try to stop what we're seeing going on. And obviously the number of Security Council members, 10 of them, have sent a letter to the Secretary General. As I said, he's taking this very seriously and has asked for thorough legal analysis. Benny.
On the UNRWA issue, since today the Netherlands joined Switzerland in suspending financial support for UNRWA. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time for the UN to be a little, I don't know, the OIOS to hasten its investigation that has gone on for a few months, if I understand it correctly, and the Secretary General to say something more definitive one way or the other.
Listen, we've seen the reports of the statements regarding UNRWA from the Dutch government. I think, as Farhan said, there is there's an investigation ongoing. It's very important that that process be respected. And I have nothing to add to what Farhan's already said.
How long is the OIOS investigation?
I do not have a date to share with you.
But since the the agency has already been under constraint, mm-hmm. financial constraints because of the mm-hmm. U.S. leaving, and now two major supporters as yeah. well. Aren't we getting to a crisis moment here?
I will see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Monica.
Away from the microphone.
We're never away from the microphone.
I know. Are we expecting to hear from the SGC?
It's
going
to be a little bit. It's my
preference. Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome back, Steph. Thank you very much. We will start today. We have two notes for you today. The President of the General Assembly has concluded her official travel to the Russian Federation earlier today. Ms. Maria Fernanda Espinosa paid a short visit to Lenin's mausoleum in Red Square in the center of Moscow. In Russia, the PGA met the country's foreign minister, His Excellency Mr. Sergei Lavrov. She also held separate bilateral meetings with the acting chairman of the State Duma, the lower house of the Federal Assembly, Russia's parliament, His Excellency Mr. Alexander Zhukov, and with the country's deputy foreign minister, His Excellency Mr. Sergei Ryabkov. The PGA also spoke at the Valdai Discussion Club and later met a group of model UN students from the Moscow State Institute of International Relations and the university's rector, Mr. Anatoly Turkinov. More details on our website, and she will be back to New York today. The General Assembly will hold a high-level commemorative event of the General Assembly of the 30th anniversary of the Convention on the Rights of the Child. The meeting will take place for your diaries on 25th September from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. to 9 a.m., actually 1 hour, in the Trusteeship Council Chamber. It will also serve as a call to action for member states to strengthen their commitment to advance the rights of the child in the face of the new challenges of the 21st century. Since the adoption of the convention 30 years ago, the lives of millions of children have been improved. During the event on 25th September, states or member states will have the opportunity to endorse a non-binding and voluntary global pledge or recommitment to the full realization of child rights. The President of the General Assembly, we are talking here about the incoming President, the Secretary General, the Executive Director of UNICEF, and the UN Messenger of Peace, Ms. Malala Yousafzai, are expected to deliver remarks. The high-level representatives of Poland, as the initiator of the Convention on the Rights of the Child and the first member state from each regional group to have ratified the document, will also speak at the event. The member states are Ghana, Vietnam, Ecuador, Sweden, and the Russian Federation. And this is everything we have for today. And as you know, probably our press briefing tomorrow will be at 12 o'clock here, 12 p.m. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to ask about Anga, if you have an idea about who will attend especially the climate financing summit, other than the world leaders, if you can give us a number now. I don't know if it's too early. And any big names, celebrities, or that we should expect?
Well, this is being organized as we speak. We also, I think we have already the list of speakers, and I can circulate to you later. It's on the website as well. I know, as everybody know, which was breaking news yesterday, James and I were speaking about that Greta Thunberg will be here. And there are other guests, and they have been making it available and known on their respective Twitter accounts. If I have more on this, I'll definitely bring it to you, because I know this is now a preparation time for us. It's the time of the year. And I will bring it to you. But a speakers list is already available, and I can email to all of you this afternoon. Yeah? As soon as I get to my office. No, thank you. Anything else? If not, James, have a wonderful holiday, and I see you when you get back. Thank you. Bye.
This is Connor Lennon from UN News. The UN mission in Mali, MINUSMA, is one of the toughest UN peacekeeping operations in the world. Peacekeepers stationed there have sustained severe and regular casualties from the activities of armed groups in the north of the country, and many civilians have borne the brunt of the instability, which includes deadly inter-ethnic clashes. The force commander of MINUSMA is the Swedish general Dennis Ulenspora. He has an extensive background in international peace operations, notably in Bosnia-Herzegovina, Sudan and Afghanistan. Ben Mailer from UN News asked General Ulenspora to outline why the UN must maintain its presence in Mali.
First of all, the UN mission in Mali is important not just for Mali, not just for the region, but it has implications for other parts of the world. So it's a conflict that should and do concern a lot of other countries. And we see that manifests itself in a huge commitment in the force, with some 55 nations being dedicated to make a difference. Second part is that it's a very challenging mission that has threats that seldom come to UN missions. We have IED threats, we have other asymmetric threats that makes it a difficult operation. It's serious in the sense that it affects the population at the end of the day. The Malian populations are the victims every day. And in particular in the central region, we have a lot of attacks against civilians. We see women, we see children being attacked in different locations, and this is an environment that is unacceptable, and we will do everything we can to mitigate these threats.
Somebody has described the UN mission in Mali as probably the most dangerous peacekeeping mission in the world. What would you say to that? What is your view on that?
Well, I haven't done the comparison, but it is a difficult mission, and sadly we have had too many fatalities in the mission. The way forward is to stay firm, to stay proactive, and to adjust to the threat environment, and be unpredictable with regards to these armed groups that challenge security. We will continue to do so. We are determined and we are focused on our mandate.
What is the greatest need for you and the troops in Mali to be able to succeed against these violent forces in the country, particularly in the north?
To make progress, the most important part for the country as a whole, and also to ensure security, is to make sure that the government extend its authority throughout the country, being present, providing social services, including security. That will be the best way to bring the country back to peace and stability. We will be there as a facilitator, as a supporter, but the government is the key actor in this place.
For people who may not have the map of Mali, can you describe how broad, how wide, how big the country is? Because you mentioned government presence in many parts is probably lacking. Describe how large an area is covered and why that is a challenge.
Well, it's a large country, and it's some 14 million people in the country. Comparing it to other countries, in particular in Europe, most of them would be dwarfed by the size of Mali. Moving from Bamako up to the north, where we have stationed, takes some 3 hours of flying, and that's not at all at the very north of the country. So it's a huge area to cover. Some parts of are dense in the central region and southern part, but in the north there are the people that live there are dispersed, small villages, and they are spread out throughout this vast area.
It seems it's not just the UN peacekeeping mission that is active in Mali. There is also the French counterterrorism operation going on in Mali. Mm-hmm. And we also have the G5 Sahel Joint Force. Mm-hmm. How do you, as force commander for the UN mission, combine with all these other elements? Are there too many chiefs, too many actors making things complicated? How are you managing?
Well, at the end of the day, we all share the same aspiration and bringing peace and security to Mali. We have different mandates and we have different reporting chains, but on the ground, we share this aspiration of moving things practically on the ground. So I say with great determination that the cooperation works very well. We meet, we discuss, we exchange information on a daily basis on different operations. We will have to continue to do this even more in the future, but I'm very pleased with the cooperation that that we enjoy. And it's a necessity to have different missions because we have so different mandates.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.